the feeling beforehand was that the opinion had polarized, but frankly we expected it to polarize around, you know, a lot of MPs backing no change, but then a lot backing 80% elected with 20% appointed. What we don't think had been anticipated was that the all-elected option would get a big majority, and it certainly did.
And tell us about the Tory tactics that helped that happen.
It's more than just Tory tactics. I think there are small C Conservatives on both sides of the House who, having seen the vote for 80%, thought, well, let's make it even more difficult for the Lords to accept and make it 100% elected. Now, it may be that it was a more principled vote than that, in that they really didn't like the hybrid option, and anything was better than a sort of, as you know, some MPs calling a dog's breakfast, where you have some elected, some appointed. But it may have been people wanting to make it difficult for the Lords to accept, make them appreciate that this is a really radical change, and hope to hold up the prospect of further reform.
If Gordon Brown becomes Prime Minister, how will he approach the question of reforming the upper house?
It's difficult to say at this stage. I mean, the conventional wisdom, I think, has been that he won't want to spend his time. You know, he's going to have other things he wants to get on with. And this is going to be a very, very difficult constitutional issue, which will take up a lot of his and Parliament's time. Now, I spoke to his people last night, and they were, they're in a very difficult position because he's not yet Prime Minister, and they want to wait and see how far Leader of the House Jack Straw gets with his cross-party talks on the issue, and we've also got a vote in the Lords next week. So they're still in the kind of wait-and-see camp. And I think the strength of the vote, I mean, a majority of over 100, 113 votes, does make it more difficult to avoid, particularly if you're coming in as Prime Minister who's promising to clean up politics, to consult Parliament more. I mean, we'll wait to see whether that in fact does happen, but that he's going to be wanting to put those sorts of messages out too. And if you've got the House of Commons saying on a free vote very aggressively we want a fully elected second chamber, then the ball is in his court a bit. I mean, he can't do nothing now. I think that's where we're at. And there might have been a feeling before last night's vote that he could have got away with doing nothing.
What about David Cameron, the Conservative leader?
A slightly less pressing but similar dilemma for him, in the sense that I gather that he's told the Tory peers that this sort of issue was very much a kind of third-term priority for him, that the Conservatives would want to spend a lot of time doing other things first. My hunch is, I haven't checked this with anybody either, but that he'd really rather the Labour dealt with it over the next two or three years, and that he, if you like, came into a clean slate. If it's still sort of going on, even when David Cameron becomes Prime Minister, he is going to have, as I say, those similar dilemmas. Do you say, well, this is the will of the House, or do you say, well, I want to do other things? Of course, the will of the House after an election may be completely different, and if there's a lot more Conservative MPs, the chances are, not absolutely certain, but the chances are that they will be more resistant to change.